to just be the purview of science fiction, but cryopreservation, where someone's body is carefully frozen in the hopes that medicine advances enough to bring them back, isn't just in the future. It's happening now. You may have heard about the Australian mum who's trying to raise $300,000 via GoFundMe to cryogenically preserve the body of her teenage son, who died by suicide last week. Claire McCann is hoping to give her 13-year-old the opportunity, as she puts it, to live again. The situation is tragic, and it raises all sorts of scientific, legal, and ethical questions. So let's unpick the technology and the ethical implications of cryogenics. Professor Gary Bryant is Head of Physics and Associate Dean at RMIT University. He studies cryobiology. And Kate Falconer is a lecturer in the School of Law at the Radical Humanities Laboratory at University College Cork. Her research focuses on laws regarding death. Gary, Kate, welcome to Life Matters.
Thanks for having us.
Kate, this case has raised a big question. Does a parent have legal rights to make this decision for their child?
I mean, that in itself is a really interesting question. The question of who has responsibility, legal responsibility, for a particular dead body is actually far more complex than people realise. But if we're talking about a minor child, someone who almost certainly doesn't have a will and doesn't have an executor, then yes, it's likely to be the parent who can make this decision.
Wow. And it's the sort of thing that I don't think I realised we had laws for, but we have to, because there are cryopreservation facilities around the world, including one here in Australia.
Yeah, definitely. So there's one in Australia, about two or three in the States, and then one in Europe, a couple in Russia, and a couple in China. So it's certainly a growing practice that people are turning to more frequently since the 60s and 70s.
Gary, your research is in cryobiology, freezing living organisms. Cryopreservation is something that most of us would associate with sci-fi, but it is happening now, at least the freezing part of it. What's the process?
So the process of cryopreservation is to take the biological cells or tissue, and you basically incorporate into them a cryoprotectant, so molecules that discourage the formation of ice and allow the formation of a glassy state. And then once they've got that cryoprotectant inside them, then you cool them down to liquid nitrogen temperatures for long-term storage.
Can you explain to me this distinction between a glassy state, which is not something I'd ever sort of thought about a body being in, versus an icy state?
Yeah, so when ice forms, ice has a structure and it forms crystals, and those crystals are damaging to biological tissue. But instead of having a liquid that can form crystals, some liquids can form what's called a glassy state, which is basically just a solid that isn't crystalline. So the window glass you see in the window is a glass, right? You can also make glass from sugar, for example. And so that's what toffee is, and that's what's used in Hollywood for people to jump through windows. It's glasses that are made out of sugar. And in nature, that's what organisms have evolved to be able to get high concentrations of sugar that allow them to form this glassy state, this solid state. So it's solid, which means there's no biochemistry can happen, so everything is stopped, but it's not damaging to the cells.
Okay, because if the cells are damaged, then at some state in the future, which is the whole point of cryopreservation, is the hope that we could bring someone back, those cells need to be intact for them to be able to live again. What do we know about whether that is physically possible with the sort of technology, the freezing technology that we have at the moment?
So the technology to be able to do this for individual isolated cells of certain types has been around since the 1940s. So originally semen and then eggs. So these have been cryopreserved for a long time. We can also cryopreserve quite a few other mammalian tissue, so red blood cells, for example. But at the moment, we can only cryopreserve a relatively small number of types of cells. And most other types of cells are resistant to cryopreservation using the techniques we have. And we currently can't cryopreserve any tissue at all. So the idea of extending that to a human body is way beyond what the science can teach us at the moment.
So what are these facilities offering then?
Well, they're offering, you know, the ability to freeze the body. I mean, they basically do the same process we would do with cells, except they do it with the whole body. But nobody has ever you know, then taken that body and then brought it back up to normal temperatures. And if they do, then what they'll find is most of the cells have been completely destroyed by the process.
Kate, so we're hearing from Gary there that the idea of bringing someone back is probably a long way off in the future, if it's possible at all. But let's say you could. What are the legal issues involved in agreeing to be cryogenically frozen?
I mean, I think probably the most significant legal issue that comes to mind when we think about being cryogenically frozen and then a potential hypothetical world of reanimation is that what people maybe don't realize is you have to be legally dead before you can be cryopreserved, because obviously the process of cryopreserving a body, if you did that to someone who was alive, it would be murder, essentially, that process would result in death and would be considered murder. So they have to be legally dead before they can be cryopreserved, which means that if in a hypothetical world someone is reanimated, the big question is, well, are you the same legal person you were before you went into this state of cryopreservation, or are you 2.0? And what does that mean for all of your obligations that you had during your first life? You know, does your phone bill kind of come knocking on your door asking for centuries of payment? What does this mean? Are you the same legal person, or are you someone else?
That is a completely mind-bending question to be asking. Where have you gotten, yeah. Where have the best legal and ethical minds in the world gotten to on this question?
Unfortunately, not very far at all from a legal perspective. I mean, I think, as Gary points out, the fact that no one has been successfully reanimated so far means we just don't have that test case necessary to really test these concerns. Certainly from from an ethical perspective, there are concerns that, you know, if you come back and you are the same person, you're the same person, but you're completely removed from all of the social context and the community that you had when you were alive the first time. It's no guarantee that your family will be there, or even that, you know, the country of Australia will still exist and that you can still be kind of considered Australian if that's what you felt yourself to be beforehand. So there are massive ethical implications there for notions of community and society as well.
I'm Tegan Taylor. You're listening to Life Matters here on Radio National, and I'm talking to Gary Bryant, who is an expert in cryopreservation, and Kate Falconer, who has looked at the legal and ethical side of this, about what goes into the decision to cryopreserve someone, freezing a body in the hopes that medicine might advance enough to be able to bring them back at some stage. If this is something that you've considered, if there's an appeal in this for you, I'd love to know what your motivations are. And in a tick, you will actually hear from a man who says he and his wife have made plans to use cryonics to come back to life after they die. But Kate, just to continue with that train of thought, how many people around the world have undergone the freezing part of this as far as we know?
So our best guess, and it is really hard to get an accurate figure, but if we go based off of public-facing information, websites and media statements, we think there's about 600 to 650 people around the world who are in a state of cryonic preservation at this point in time.
Wow. So, and then there's more people who are considering doing it, but they haven't gotten to that stage yet.
Yes. Yeah. So there'd be many, many, many thousands of people, I would suspect, who have signed up. Of course, as we've already said, you need to be legally dead to go ahead with it. So that necessarily means that many people who are signed up, it falls to their loved ones to actually see it through after they've passed away. And those loved ones might choose to not go ahead with cryopreservation.
So I want to bring in a man who says here, he and his wife have made plans to use cryonics to come back to life after they both die. Alan Pease, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you.
You and your wife had two children via IVF many years ago, a process that does involve frozen cells, as we just heard from Gary, and that got you thinking about cryopreservation, and you've decided to, commit to it.
Well, that's right. I mean, with the IVF process, it's... We had eight embryos that were part of the process that came out of it, of which four of them were put into cryosuspension and to be implanted theoretically at a later date, which three were and they didn't survive, and one, which was our daughter, who's almost 18 now, she did survive. And I remember saying to the doctors at the time, I said, how do you get a group of cells that's theoretically or technically alive, then you snap freeze it for 3 years, then you unfreeze it, now we've got a living organism. But how's that happen? And they weren't really 100% sure how that happened. Science is not quite there to explain it. And I said, well, why can't you do that with a whole human? And I had heard of cryonics through Alcor, the big American cryonic suspension facility, years earlier. So I decided to go and visit Alcor and see what they, how they were doing this. And that's where it started.
And so you've gone to the US, you've ultimately committed to the Australian cryo facility. What made you decide to go local?
Well, at the time, the only facility that was of any size, of any reputation, was the one in America. There was five at the time. Now there's around about 12, maybe 13 facilities in the world. There's a brand new, five brand new ones in China. The Chinese are really getting into this idea. And at the time, just to be able to go to America, going into a frozen state, as you might call it, was not the big issue. It was getting from Australia to America in one piece without damaging the body and the cells. That was the hard part. And I had heard here in Australia that a guy in Melbourne was getting a group together to create a cryonics facility. And so there were 35 of us became foundation members, and the facility's at Holbrook, just outside Albury, down on the Victorian border in New South Wales. And that facility opened, we finished that about 2.5 years ago. And our first guy went in about 8 months ago. He's now hanging upside down by his ankles in his sleeping bag, waiting for the technology to catch up.
It's such a strange thing to sort of imagine for your own future, Alan. When you're looking beyond the frozen state and to what you hope would happen on the other side of it, i.e. coming back to life again, what do you imagine that life looks like?
Well, that's a big question, isn't it? I mean, that question scares a lot of people. And we found that in talking with people about cryonics, which we don't do much anymore because people have difficulty getting their head around it. And many people are prepared to have one life and give it up. In fact, the majority, from what we can see, would rather give it up. And some of them, I looked at their life and I thought, gee, if I had your life, I wouldn't want to come back. I have more of that either. I mean, to come back, to want to come back again, have a second crack at this, you've got to love life. And that's what Barbara, my wife, and I do. We just love our life. We've had an incredible life, like a Hollywood movie. And we just don't want to give it up. We do not want to give it up. And someone said, well, what if you're wrong? What if all this is wrong? Well, I'll be dead. I'm going to be dead anyway. So what does it matter? I mean, the concept of eternal blackness has absolutely no appeal to us at all. And as your other guests have said, the technology is not there yet to be able to do this. We can go into cryonics, okay. We can snap freeze like our fellow down in Holbrook, or the 600 that Alcor and the Americans and the Russians have. And there's about another 6,000 that have signed up who are part of the membership getting ready to go in. So when they die, the insurance or their bank or somebody will pay for them to go in there. But, I mean, what's the odds of it happening? 50-50? I'm an optimistic. I really am an optimist, and I'd like to say yes, it is. And as I said, if I'm wrong, well, so what? I'm dead anyway.
So, okay, I want to know what your kids think about this, because there's a cost involved in it. If the 50% is on the wrong side and you don't make it back, then that's money that your kids can't spend after you're gone, the potential of getting you back in the future. What conversations have you had there?
You're dead right. And, I mean, Australia is the cheapest place in the world right now to be cryonically suspended. It runs around $200,000 all up. Now, look, think of it this way. I've got six kids. Let's say I split that $200,000 up amongst them. You've got about $40,000 each. Well, the boys would buy a fast car and run it into a wall. The girls would have a party. They'd all have go on a cruise to Disneyland, and that'd be the end of it. There'd be nothing left. So I'm not doing that. No, damn that. I'm going in to cry. I have sufficient faith in science and the fact that science is doubling in some cases now every 12 months, that pretty soon in the future, and we used to think 50 to 100 years, now we're thinking a lot less time, that this technology will catch up. And we know that there are other animals like the wood frog in the Arctic that can cryosuspend itself. It turns into solid ice for 9 months. When the ice melts, it's a frog again and jumps around. So we know there are some small animals that can do this. It's just a matter of waiting till the technology works out how to do it with humans. And listening to what Gary was saying earlier was right. A lot of people think you're going to bring your body back. I don't want this body back. I have wrecked this one. I've broken every bone in it. It's been an adventure. I've absolutely ruined it. I don't want it back. I'll come back as digital, which means I can go into a cyborg. I can go into a computer. I can be emailed as Elon Musk says through a black hole to another galaxy and be 3D printed and never get killed. Well, just print another one.
Alan, I love your optimism and your faith in science. All the very best to you. Gary, I'd love to bring you into into sort of fact check a couple of things that Alan's saying there. Is his optimism well placed, or are there some fundamental flaws here?
Well, I love his enthusiasm, but I think there are some fundamental flaws. Basically, there are two big issues. One is the current process for cryopreservation damages cells, and we know that. And the fact that there are certain species that have evolved to be able to take them to low temperatures, and by the way, not to liquid nitrogen temperatures like for the frog, that's because they've evolved very special mechanisms to do that, and our body hasn't done that. So we can add cryoprotectants, but it's not enough to actually stop the damage. And those cryoprotectants are by their very nature toxic. And so when you fill the body with these cryoprotectants, you're going to be damaging all the cells just by the fact that cryoprotectants are there. Then potentially there's more damage when you cool down. So then when you thaw it back up, again, there's potentially damage. So there's going to be damage to everything when you thaw back. But then the other question is, you have to then bring somebody back from the dead, right? And so that's a whole other sort of scientific issue. And we can't currently do that even with a body that isn't cryopreserved. So we're a long, long way away from this being possible, if at all.
You're listening to Life Matters here on Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor. We're talking about cryopreservation, and I'm interested to know if there's an appeal for you in the chance to live a second life. Kate, on the text line, an interesting legal question. One person's asking, what happens when the upkeep costs can't be paid? Do they dispose of the contents of the preservation, or does it become the property of the company?
See, that is a really, really interesting question, and it's another one that we don't have a clear legal answer for. There's been a couple of instances kind of when cryonics was first taking off in the US from the 60s and 70s where, you know, facilities went bust, and there was the question of, well, who is going to care for these bodies when, you know, people can't pay or the facility is going into receivership or something. And basically what happened in those instances was the cryonics community rallied around and said, we can't let these bodies be disposed of because the optics would be so bad for the movement of, you know, if we let these bodies just be, you know, tipped down the drain or whatever it might be. So in those instances, it was the cryonics community who crowdfunded and got the funds together to keep those bodies in cryonic preservation. As to what would happen, you know, now, if that were to, you know, end up in court, we're just not sure. And, you know, I wouldn't wish being a test case on anybody in that situation.
And then also just the body as an, it sounds so crude to say it, but as an object, for example, if a lab had to destroy bodies or was burnt down, are we treating them as people because they could be future people, or are we treating them as items?
Yeah. So, I mean, the position that the law has taken for hundreds of years has been that the dead body can't be property because there's all sorts of issues about human dignity and commodification around that. But there are a couple of key exceptions, and one of those is called the work or skill exception, which is where if someone applies work or skill to a dead body, it becomes their personal property. And so, you know, we've had cases where, you know, organs taken from dead bodies have been preserved, and that preservation has meant that the person who did that preserving, often a hospital, you know, a doctor, then gets a property right in that portion of a dead body. So if we apply that logic to the cryopreserved corpse, what it means is the facility applying that work or skill is getting a property interest in that body. And, you know, that is at real odds with our conception of the person who is in a state of cryopreservation as having some ongoing personhood. It might not be legal personhood, but we can still recognize them as having an ongoing presence. And so how can we carry those two thoughts in our head at once? This is a very clearly still a person, but the law says we might be able to treat them as property. And so it's a really tense kind of legal normative area that we don't have clear answers for. And I wish I could give a clear answer, but unfortunately we just don't have one.
So Judy on the text line says, I'd put more faith in reincarnation than cryonics. Certainly listening to Gary describing the biology side of it and the thorny legal sides of it that you're mentioning, Kate, it does make me wonder what the ethics are of accepting money as an organisation for procedures like this, when the chances of it yielding any kind of benefit down the track seem very slim?
Yes, I mean, definitely. There's certainly ethical issues there. And there's other ethical issues about, you know, if we think about kind of the resource-intensive nature of cryonics as well, that's another kind of area that there hasn't been much attention paid to, but there's massive potential environmental impacts, particularly if we see more and more and more people taking up cryopreservation. There's going to be significant environmental impacts as well. So it's not just perhaps the financial side of things. There's also other ethical implications that we need to be keeping in mind.
Gary, what do you say to people who are contemplating this for themselves?
Well, I would say that they're not going to be brought back, just plain and simple, using current technologies, right? So the damage is going to be done before they're actually, when they're actually cryopreserved. So there's no chance of them being brought back. You know, maybe at some very distant time in the future, the technology might be there, but that's, you know, we're talking millennia probably, if ever. So I would advise against it and suggest maybe they could spend their money on some medical research to investigate the sort of things that lead people to die in the first place.
Mm. Kate, what do you recommend people consider if they are genuinely looking into this for themselves?
I recommend that people make sure they're fully on top of the legal issues, but also the social issues as well. You know, the act of being cryopreserved has implications for the loved ones you leave behind in terms of their ability to mourn you fully and kind of move on if you are this ongoing presence in the world. But also to make sure if you are going ahead with it, that you are fully thinking through how you're going to fund your reanimated life, keeping in mind that if we're talking millennia, the Australian dollar probably won't exist. So making sure you've got alternative plans.
Such an incredibly long time frame to be considering. Thank you so much, Kate Falconer, lecturer in School of Law at the Radical Humanities Laboratory at University College Cork. Thanks also to Professor Gary Bryant, Head of Physics and Associate Dean at RMIT University, and Alan Pease, enthusiastic planner to cryopreserve himself and his wife Barbara when it's time. And thanks for your text. Judy makes a great point, saying if someone could come back to life after cryonics, presumably their body would still have to recover from the causes of death. Who's going to pay for the treatment they'd need to have a viable, healthy body? Well, maybe they could be emailed. Like Alan said before, anything's possible on a long enough time frame, I suppose, when we're talking about science.
Stream any ABC radio station live and on the go. Discover new podcasts, music and audiobooks, all free on the ABC Listen app.